Sure. So the data is through as of June 20th of this year, and the return of the S&P 500 at that time was 14.3%. So what's interesting is that the nine largest companies comprise almost 31% of the market capitalization. If you were to exclude these top nine stocks that comprise the 31% concentration of the S&P 500, the index, the remainder of the index would have performed at just 3%.
That is actually pretty crazy. That's very strong concentration within certain companies domiciled in the United States that made up the vast majority of the S&P's performance, again, given that time frame.
Welcome to Critical Thinking Required, hosted by LBW. This podcast is intended for free thinkers, entrepreneurs, and knowledge seekers. Join us as we discuss relevant financial topics, explore with guests their financial journeys, and engage with experts in industries such as space, media and entertainment, real estate, and many more. Buckle up and enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Critical Thinking Required. You're with your host, myself, Tim Bickmore, and my colleague, Nathaniel Leach. Today, we're going to talk about the S&P 500. So why are we talking about the S&P 500 today? Because it's done quite well this year. In 2023, it's performed from a price perspective very well. And we've gotten a lot of comments and conversations with our clients about, hey, my 401k is not performing as well as the S&P. Should I be making any changes? What should I be doing? So we read a really good article recently. It was published back in June, Nathaniel. It was a Barron's article about some of the attributes of this performance. So where is the outperformance coming from? You know, why is the S&P doing so well? And we thought it was a really great article that explains actually quite a bit to give more context to the general public about, hey, what's really going on with the S&P and should you be making any different changes to your portfolio? Now, again, please talk to a professional about if you should make changes like ourselves. Make sure you have those conversations. But, you know, where we're sitting right now is that we want to make sure people understand why the S&P has performed. So, with that being said, obviously, I have Nathaniel here with me that can talk a little bit more on the investment management side of the world. And the first thing I want to ask you, Nathaniel, is before we even start getting into the S&P, can you just please give us a good description of what in the hell is the S&P 500? What does that even mean? People call it the market. Just give me a shot at that one.
So the S&P 500 stands for Standard & Poor's 500. It's the top 500 companies that are publicly traded in the U.S. stock markets by market capitalization. So the largest 500 companies in the U.S. are on this index. And it's technically not, it's supposed to be 500 companies, but the actual number shifts over time as constituents are added and subtracted from the index.
All right. So could you just give us a little bit of like, why do people call it the market? When people say, hey, the market's up today, why is the S&P typically kind of tied to that narrative or that that connotation?
Sure. Well, the S&P 500 is typically, as I said, the 500 largest stocks, which does comprise a good portion of, if you're looking at it from a market cap status. So there's close to 3,000, I think, U.S. publicly traded stocks. Those 500, though, comprise the majority of the market capitalization of all 3,000 stocks. So that's why it's considered the market.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. So as I mentioned earlier, Nathaniel, the S&P has performed quite well year to date. And we're going to be using some of the article's information here just so all our audience is aware. So this is a little dated back into June timeframe. But can you tell us a little bit about what the year-to-date returns were looking like at that moment around that June timeframe, Nathaniel?
Sure. So the data is through as of June 20th of this year. And the return of the S&P 500 at that time was 14.3%. So what's interesting is that, so that 14.3% is from January 1 to June 20th of 2023. If you were to look at that, the 10-year and 20-year average through that date over those respective periods of time, the 10-year would be 3.6% and the 20-year would be 3%. So meaning that on average, during that same period of time in prior years, during those respective timeframes, those were the average returns that you would see during those same timeframes. So the 14.3% is much higher than the average. So that was an interesting, that was a statistic that we found to be interesting from that article.
Got it. Okay. And just to clarify with that, with the timeframes, is that we're really looking from January 1 up to June 20th of every year over 10 years or over 20 years. And then over that 10-year time frame, you're looking at roughly 3.6% is what the S&P earned, or 3% over a 20-year time frame, looking again from January 1 to June of 2022, or June 20th of each year, correct?
Correct.
All right. I know it gets a little confusing. Hey, if anyone out there has questions, just holler at us. We'll always help answer that one out. But it is a good antidote. It's very interesting to see that it is some significant outperformance. I don't know, Daniel, maybe some of the pundits out there maybe call this like the first half year growth, like kind of Santa Claus rally. Maybe they'll come up with something new. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe come up with some cool thoughts there. I don't know. That's just a little aside note, I guess. Nathaniel wasn't very excited about that. But we'll come back to it. All right. So that's really good to know. The outperformance is definitely there this year. So could you please just kind of dive into like, what does this mean? Were all 500 companies up 14%? Like, what did this 14% truly comprise of? Does this really represent the market? Could you just kind of give us some of your thoughts there?
Sure. So what we're trying to get at here is that what Tim is trying to intimate is that the majority of that performance through that time period that we're discussing here, the rest of the US stock market, even the rest of the S&P 500, really didn't partake in that return. They did not contribute in that return. Both actually, they didn't partake, nor did they contribute. So just to give you some statistics here, the 9 largest companies in the S&P 500 account for approximately 31% of the total market capitalization of the index. So let me repeat that. The 9 largest companies comprise almost 31% of the market capitalization. They are 31% concentrated in those 9 companies. Okay.
Do you like my expression there when you know, the second time? That was great. It is quite a bit. It's a lot. That is a lot.
So those 9 companies consist of Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, NVIDIA, Tesla, Alphabet, which is Google, Meta, Facebook, Berkshire Hathaway, and United Health Group. So of those 9 companies, 2023's performance has been mainly pushed by these top tech companies, of which 2 of those have had, Tesla has had about 120% plus rise, and then NVIDIA has had approximately a 200% increase over that time period in 2023 alone. These 2 companies by themselves contributed more than 3 percentage points of that 14% return during that time period. If you were to exclude these top 9 stocks that comprise the 31% concentration of the S&P 500, the index, the remainder of the index would have performed at just 3% over that same time period up through June 20. So in comparison to the 10-year and 20-year averages.
That is actually pretty crazy. That's very strong concentration within certain companies domiciled in the United States that made up the vast majority of the S&P's performance, again, given that time frame, which is from January 1 to June 20th of 2023. I mean, Nathaniel, how do you feel about that type of concentration, that kind of performance? Like, what are your just overall thoughts on it? Let's give it to the audience here.
Sure. So so we're fans of concentration when we know what we're investing in. So it comes back to the circle of competence, right? Like, if you understand what you're investing in, then we've always been comfortable with concentration when it comes to our clients' investments. But when it comes to an index and you're blind, there is no price discovery. When you buy into an index, you are not buying into, you're not picking the valuations that you're buying in at. You are choosing to buy all 500 stocks, no matter what the valuation is at that point in time. So then that's where concentration can be a potential risk. Because as you become, because if you look throughout history of the S&P 500 and you look at where the weightings were in what sectors or industries over time, they ebb and flow. In the 90s, it used to be that energy was a big concentrated factor, a big weighting within the S&P 500. That's nowhere close to what it is today. It is nowhere close to what it was then. Actually, this is how I'd phrase that. So there's pros and cons to everything. It's a balancing act. And yeah.
Yeah, but it's concentrated. Why do you think that these big companies had this big jump going into 2023? I mean, like you mentioned, Tesla up over 120%, Nvidia almost up over 200%. Like, do you have any thoughts or you know, ideas on what was going on there? I know you don't know the thesis, or there's always a, you know, not the details, but just maybe just a high level, like, hey, what's going on that side of the world?
Sure. So it seems to have boiled down to a general macro theme, artificial intelligence. There's been a lot of excitement since the turn of the year after OpenAI debuted. People got very excited about the possibilities of artificial intelligence, AI. So there was this huge upswing in companies or the perception of companies that were going to be making investments in AI or had stated that they were going to be making pushes into AI, or it was the perception that they were going to have a long runway for potential reaping of rewards when it came to AI. So this concept of jumping on the AI wagon came into the frame, and people have been running up those prices, specifically those top tech companies, with the belief that AI will factor into their future returns. So the market is excited. But even though you have to think about investing in stocks as a long-term investment, because typically the market is logical over long periods of time. In the short term, though, it's typically hypersensitive and volatile as the market ingests new trends and the gossip of the day. So the question becomes, should you invest in the AI trend? We'd recommend you go to one of our past podcasts, The New Trend, Investors Flee from Crypto to AI, to hear some thoughts on that from us. But as I mentioned previously, one of the most important things in investing is to understand your circle of competence. So if you are an expert in the AI industry and you understand it, then yes, you should invest how you see fit. You should invest in what you understand. Just be aware of the risks. And because that's within your circle of competence, you'd be aware of those risks, so on and so forth, then go for it. But if you are not an AI expert, you have to treat that kind of investment with caution. This can be applied to anything. It can be AI, it can be crypto. If you don't understand it, always invest with caution. So last year's stock market was not great. If you looked at the previous time frame, from January 1, 2022 to June 20th of 2022, the market didn't do so well. The S&P was actually down 23% during that same time frame. So we're comparing 23% decrease to 14.3% increase. So if we're going to compare those two periods, something contributed to that downturn as well. And it was those same top nine companies. At one point throughout the year, Apple was down roughly 27%, Microsoft down about 29%, Alphabet down about 30%, Amazon and Meta did even worse. Amazon at one point was down to 50% decrease throughout the year. Meta was down more than 65%. So public markets are very volatile in the short term. So you have to ask yourself, can you stomach that kind of volatility? Our preference is always to invest in industries and companies that we truly understand. And if we feel like the need to invest some money in like trends or following the macro trends like AI, which we typically don't even feel that. But if we did, we would use what we call FU money. FU money means that you don't care if you lose that money in the market entirely. It's a bet that you're okay. It's a speculative bet. If you lose the money, it's okay. You're not going to hurt yourself. You're not going to hurt your finances. You're not going to hurt that short-term goal of buying a car, buying a home, what have you. It's FU money that you can afford to lose. If you want to invest in something that you don't understand and in a trend that happens to be going on at that time, use that money that we would call FU money. But if you're thinking about investing your 401k or a long-term investment vehicle that you're dependent on to provide income for your retirement or in the medium term or what have you, don't invest that money.
Very fair. I like that point. I mean, and what's really interesting too is the volatility in which we saw from year over year, right? Year to year. A lot of these companies were getting blasted from the sense of a COVID pull forward, right? During COVID, a lot of these companies got pulled forward in growth. I think that, as you mentioned too, the analysts are saying, hey, look, there's this new AI trend, and these are new growth market opportunities, which makes these companies, even though they're quite mature, such as Google, Meta, Amazon, they're new growth opportunities within the companies to kind of attract and go after. There's always risks to everything. I think one that is always brought up is regulatory risk. Google has been under a little bit of pressure when it comes to antitrust regulations. So are they monopoly? Are they not? How are they being anti-competitive? So there's always risks that are going on within certain companies. I think the biggest thing though, Thani, at the end of the day, is understanding that the S&P, which I might say this incorrectly, I heard it or I read it somewhere, that the S&P has become the index for a mega tech stock market index, right? Like it's kind of like a really concentrated NASDAQ. And what's interesting about it is the concentration which the S&P holds of these top companies. And just understanding that that's the case, which is okay as long as you're understanding of what you're investing in, but also making sure that, again, if you're going to index, indexation, again, is a part of being diversified and owning more than just the S&P. It's owning international, it's owning small cap to mid cap, like the total market, not just the S&P 500, because again, the S&P may outperform, but small cap may outperform before, right? And it will ebb and it will flow. So having that good balanced allocation over time can make sense for an investor. And it's good to know where your exposure is coming from and then the return. So at the end of the day, when people say, hey, my 401k, it's not quite where the S&P is, that might be okay. It might be part of the strategy. It might be part of the diversification in which should play out over the long term, which we will say over and over and over again as broken records. If you're going to invest any of those, you have to have a long-term mindset, because I really liked how Nathaniel said this. It made me actually think about it. The market ingesting new information, it's like your stomach ingesting new food and has to kind of boil it down, right? Like you might get bloated. You might feel really good. It depends on what you ate. And that's kind of like what I was thinking about with the market, is you have to let it figure itself out. But over the long run, it will be nice and smooth, and will be smoothed out over time. Nathaniel, you got it.
I got another metaphor, actually. You can let it percolate. Let the news percolate.
Percolate. There you go.
That's a funner word.
I like that. So I agree with you. I think it's very important. Nathaniel, I know you have said quite a bit. Do you have any last thoughts for us on the S&P? I appreciate the insights in which you were, kind of provided.
I think that index investing as a whole it's been very interesting to watch its trajectory over the past few decades. I think that It's just something that's you definitely need to keep an eye on about what you're actually invested in. And I think that over the long term, as long as you remain invested and you ride the hills and the valleys out, you will do well. I don't think that's ever going to change. But what is the definition of well? I mean, I think that returns might be lesser than what they have been in the past 10, 15 years. We've gone through a period of extreme stock market growth, and it will be hard to replicate going forward.
That's a good point. I mean, my last thoughts, honestly, are making, as Nathaniel said, I'll reiterate and reemphasize, is, you know, paying attention to what you own. We talk a lot about it in-house. And showing people what securities are really coming to that performance, and what does that really look like. As Nathaniel mentioned very eloquently, as much as this can go up, it can come back down. 2022 to 2023 are really good examples of that. Those companies were down, underperformance. This year they're up, outperformance. So in the short term, trying to judge that, trying to time it is a fool's errand. Don't be doing that. It's if you're going to invest in it, keep your strategy, keep consistent with it over time. And as Nathaniel said, that should play out or position you to have the best outcome possible. But it has to be consistency over time. As Dan has said very, very many times in our in LBW's life, is that everyone talks about investing in themselves, investing in anything other than the stock market, and people typically think of consistency and time put in to get better. The market's the exact same. You do not just go to the roulette table and hit it once. You have to be consistent and put in the time in order for it to work for you, because if you don't give it the time, it can beat you up pretty good. And that's really difficult. So overall, paying attention. So when going back to the very beginning of this podcast, like I just mentioned slightly earlier, when we are looking at our portfolios, the questions to ask are not, why am I not up or down compared to the S&P? It is, why is there a difference, and what strategy are we, and does it make sense based off where we're at? Getting a full understanding of the approach, not just comparing it to one thing, because there is more nuance. There are more things about it, especially when looking at 401ks. Making adjustments may not make sense. Again, make sure you talk to a professional about it, understand what those are. But it could be stay the course, even though it may not be performing similar to a index like the S&P or the Dow Jones or the NASDAQ or a Russell 3000, whatever it may be that you're comparing performance to. So that's really all I got. Nathaniel, I'm pretty sure you probably are tapped out. We got a lot out of you today. So thank you so much for everybody listening to our podcast. Again, if you have the time, give us a like, give us a comment. Holler at us. And even if you have questions that you want us to talk about, please shoot us our way. We're always happy to do that. And we really appreciate the time and the audience. So thank you so much.
Like and subscribe.
Thank you for taking the time to start your journey of thinking differently and listening to LBW talk about stuff they love. Until next time. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual on any specific security, on any specific broker-dealer, or custodian. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments, broker-dealer, or custodian may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. All opinions expressed by podcast participants are solely their own and do not reflect the opinion of Leach, Bickmore, and Weiss Wealth Management, LLC. Leach, Bickmore, and Weiss Wealth Management, LLC is a registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where Leach, Bickmore, and Weiss Wealth Management, LLC, and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. No advice may be rendered by Leach, Bickmore, and Weiss Wealth Management, LLC, unless a client service agreement is in place.